listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. I'm your host, LaShard Binkley. I'm Director of Basketball Operations for Overtime Heroics. I'm a contributor for Space City Scoop. And of course, I'm a podcast host for the Launchpad Podcast, which is presented by Apollo Media. Be sure to follow Apollo Media account at Apollo H-O-U. That's Apollo H-O-U, which is H-O-U is actually capitalized, as well as hitting the subscribe buttons on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. Today, we have a special episode as we're wrapping up the season. The Rockets are actually wrapping up the season today, a game 72 of a very long season, as we all know. We're actually going to be doing a roundtable podcast where we're going to go through some of the greatest moments throughout the years, maybe some of the greatest disappointments, depending on how you look at it. We're going to go through and answer some of the questions with our roundtable guest here. And first off, I wanted to introduce, I guess, we have on today's show, as y'all, a lot of y'all know, my Apollo fellow team members. We have Britt and Anthony are on, and we also have a special guest, Tony Cole, who a lot of y'all know on Rockets Twitter. So first off, I wanted to have everybody introduce themselves. So why don't you go ahead and kick us off, Britt?
Yeah, so as LaShard mentioned, my name's Britt. I am a contributor here at Apollo Media. I'm frequently on the Launchpad podcast, and then I'm also a co-host on Step Back Sisterhood, another podcast that is outside of the Apollo Media family, but I'm definitely on it at least twice a month. And you can find me on Twitter at Britt Robatista.
And I'm Anthony Duckett. I'm also a, of course, pod host for Apollo Media Launchpad Podcast. I'm also the site expert for Space City Scoop. And you can find me on Twitter at @A_Duckett.
Tony Coleman. I'm a longtime Rockets fan, amateur NBA analyst, professional online troller. You can catch me on Twitter at @Coltrane_TNT.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all been following in Tony and talking to Tony online for a long time now. So it's definitely great to have you on the show. And you kind of being modest that you also have some of the best takes on Twitter as far as the Rockets are concerned. So definitely, if you haven't already followed Tony Cole, make sure you definitely follow him, because like I say, he's one of the best follows on Twitter.
And then one thing about Tony is that he always wants to smoke. Always wants to smoke
all the time.
I've never seen him back down on Twitter from anybody ever.
that is definitely true. So before we kick off actually the questions that we're going to go through, I actually want to get everybody's opinion on this past, or actually this weekend, where we saw some, you know, for the first time in a long time, we actually saw a lot of positive news. I guess it kind of depends on how you look at the Bill World news, but it was still good to be able to see all the people that he's influenced over the years and all the people's lives he affected over the years. So even though he's leaving, that's not a great thing, but it was good to see everybody kind of rally around and, you know, pay tribute to him. So I want to get everybody's opinion, not only on Bill Worrell last game as a Rockets announcer, but also Rudy T going into the Hall of Fame, which should have happened a long time ago. So Britt, why don't we kick it off with you? What was kind of your impressions of, you know, those two events, and then actually the Rockets getting a win for the first time in a long time?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It was a significantly better weekend compared to a lot of other weekends that the Rockets have had over the last entire season. I was very thrilled to see Rudy T be enshrined as the Naismith Hall of Fame, like people to say, into the Hall of Fame. That was a long time coming, and it was just so, I guess, maybe humbling, at least for me, to hear him talk about, you know, his life experience, and then also give a lot of shout outs to a lot of former Rockets, including, you know, saying that Robert Horry should be in the Hall of Fame at some point. So it was good to see that. It was, you know, bittersweet to see Bill Royal or Bill get, you know, take his final bow on Rockets TV. I mean, I think regardless of what a lot of people think about Bill, especially more recently, he is the voice of the Rockets and has been a part of, I think, all of our lives for the majority, or at least in my opinion, the majority of my life. So it was, you know, sad to see him go, but I was happy that, you know, he got so much love and positive feedback. And then the Rockets winning is nice. I mean, I guess it just sort of feels okay, especially since the Clippers looked like they were trying to, you know, purposely tank so that they can avoid, you know, center people in the playoffs. But at the same time, they still had, you know, competent players playing. So you'll take anyone however you can get it, especially since the Rockets had were on another losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, like you said, I mean, their winning doesn't affect their standings one way or another as far as the draft. So at this point, if they want to win two in a row, I'll definitely take it after this long season. So Anthony, what's your opinion on how do you feel about this, you know, past couple of days for the Rockets?
Well, I mean, kind of like what Britt said, I mean, it felt right to, you know, for the Rockets to get a win on Worrell's send-off, right? I mean, Bill Rose, a legend. He's like the face or the voice of Houston sports. He's done like Oilers, Astros, obviously, you know, with the Rockets, all, you know, all of the great memories, moments. Of course, as of late, he has kind of, I wouldn't say fell off. It's just natural. I mean, he's been doing it for so long, you know, he's had some lapses, I guess, memory lapses, kind of forgetting players' names, things like that. But again, that's kind of the norm, kind of what you would expect. But again, I mean, I feel like Worrell is just the voice overall of Houston sports. And I'm really happy. I mean, that there were a lot of great moments during that game, a lot of tributes. I mean, Tad Brown had kind words. I mean, yeah. Tillman as well. It just felt like the right send-off. And then as far as Rudy T, I mean, it's crazy that it took him that long to get in the Hall because, I mean, I feel like he should have been in at least a decade ago, know. And it's kind of weird. It's like, what did they see all of a sudden now that made them, you know, get him, induct him now that they didn't see 10 years ago, you know? It's not like he's coached any extra games since then, but, but I mean, it talk about him being selfless, you know, during that whole speech, he gave so many shout outs to other players. I mean, it was a moment that was about him. And he could have absolutely just talked about him the entire time. But, you know, he made sure to say the reason why I'm here is because of these people. You know, he shouted out players, coaches. And I think it just goes to kind of show the kind of person that Rudy T is.
Yeah, exactly. And he also shouted out to the fans, which is great. I mean, he included everybody into it. And like you said, yeah, it's not like he's actually, you know, been winning games in the last 10 years that would change their mind. So, yeah, I've always found that kind of weird. Like, you don't make it the first ballot, but you make it the fourth ballot. I never understood that. But, hey, I guess we'll take it. So, Tony, what's your take on it?
First of all, I've been a Rockets fan since I can remember, since the early to mid 80s, and the one constant that I've had in my fandom is Bill Worrell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, seeing him go, I mean, I didn't think that it would hit me as hard as it did, but his last sign off, I mean, I was about to shed some thug tears, man. It was hard. Yeah. I mean, he's like the epitome of Houston. I mean, like, I was there during 94, or during 94, 95, 95, 96 championships. And I mean, he was there. Like, I saw him during the parade, and it was like he was part of the team. I mean, even his final send off when he was like, I want y'all to stay with the Rockets because they'll be back. And that shows the kind of effect that he had on the city as a whole. So he's going to be greatly missed. As far as Rudy T, I don't know why they held that one moment in his career against him for so long. Because if you didn't know, he was almost killed during a fight during his playing career. And it was one of the hugest black guys that the NBA ever had, which is why he was effectively kept out on a Hall of Fame, because he probably should have been in as a player, not just as a coach. But the reason that he was kept out for so long was because of that moment. And it wasn't even his fault. He was blindsided, and he almost died.
Yeah.
So watching him, you know, overcome all of that, become a championship coach, and now sitting in the Hall of Fame, I mean, that's Houston in a nutshell. Because we are a very blue-collar city, and watching him, you know, get his flowers finally, it was like a great moment in Houston sports history, even though, you know, it wasn't just him as a Houston coach and a player, but it's one of those moments that I think Houston fans can take with them and carry on forever.
Yeah, and like you said, I think some of it is an East Coast bias as well, because a lot of the voters a lot of time are up in the East Coast. And I mean, if you look at it over the years, like Chuck Daly went in, you know, late great Chuck Daly went in pretty much right away when he was eligible. And you put up Rudy T's resume up against his, it's not even really close as far as, you know, just overall impact when you factor in, because, you know, a lot of people forget that the Hall of Fame, you know, it's not just based on, you know, a lot of time what you do, you know, in the NBA, especially when you factor in as a player. Like you say, he should have been as a player. He's Michigan's all-time leading rebounder. He was a five-time All-Star before that Kermit Washington incident that you were speaking about. So, I mean, Rudy T probably should have been in, like you said, a long time ago. But it was the same thing with Guy V. Lewis. It took forever for them to finally get him in. So it almost seemed like it's sometimes maybe some East Coast bias going on where they don't really recognize a lot of what's going on down, you know, especially in the South, especially in Houston. But it was good to see him get in. He was supposed to, you know, get introduced last year before, you know, for the COVID shutdown. So it's good that they were able to get him in this year. And like I said about Bill Worrell, I mean, I echo all that. I think me and Tony may be kind of close in age. So I've been listening to Bill since the 80s, him and, you know, Calvin Murphy, since like the mid 80s. So I don't know anybody else but, you know, Bill Worrell and Calvin Murphy and Gene Peterson and Jim Foley. Those are the people I knew when I was growing up, you know, watching TV on Channel 20 and listening to the radio. So, yeah, it was definitely bittersweet to see them stepping away. But I think the Rockets are in good hands when I would assume they're going to give it full time to Craig Ackerman. So I think they're definitely in good hands with, you know, with Craig, because he's been with the Rockets forever, and Matt Thomas on the radio side. So it'll definitely be interesting. We have so much turnover with the Rockets. I've never seen so much turnover with the Rockets in one year, from, you know, Daryl Morey, you know, Anthony's favorite person, to James Harden leaving, Russell Westbrook leaving, even though he wasn't here that long, but still, you know, Thad Brown stepping away. I mean, it's a ton of turnover. So it's going to be an interesting offseason for sure. So we're going to actually get in a couple questions before we end this first segment. So let's go ahead and jump into the roundtable questions. So first, let's start off with you, Tony, on this. What was like your most surprising storyline of the season? It could be good or bad, you know, depending on how you look at it.
The most surprising storyline was the implosion of the team.
Yeah.
I mean, it just came out of nowhere. I think when Silas was hired, the excitement was high. And then all of a sudden, it was like one brick just kept falling after the other.
Yeah.
It was like James Harden wants out, Russ wants out, John Wall comes. I mean, it was like that's something I've never seen in my life, where you have a full team going into training camp and then all of a sudden you have nothing.
Yeah,
I think that was my most surprising moment.
Yeah, I mean, just the way it kind of just fell off, you know, one piece at a time. It was is almost like watching a slow train wreck throughout the season. So, yeah, that definitely, I think, surprised all of us if you really look at it. So, Britt, what was your most surprising storyline for this season?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could, of course, talk more about the implosion of the team. But I think the biggest thing for me is that Steven Silas's ability to persevere.
Yeah.
I mean, just like what Tony mentioned, there have been so many struggles, to be blunt about it, that the team has gone through, you know, having their major star essentially say that it won't work and being traded to the 30 people on the team or players on the team that have been on the roster since the beginning, a NBA record, along with, you know, so many things that we can probably talk about more. But Steven Silas, you know, other than a few games where he has been, you know, obviously down after a loss, usually he has been so good in front of the, you know, for the players as well as in front of the media. I don't know how he has done it, and I hope that this will be like the bottom point of his career and everything looks a little bit more rosy after this. But he has been a really good coach, at least so far, and hopefully he'll be able to be more successful in future years.
Anthony?
I think what I've been most surprised by has actually been Tillman Fertitta.
Oh, wow.
because for once, I feel like he's kind of doing the right thing. You know, I mean, typically I feel like he's kind of sabotaging or getting in the way of, you know, things that, or the team affairs, or holding them back, I guess, is the best way to put it. But now, I mean, it feels like he hasn't really been in the media, which is a great change. And then, you know, that when he has talked, the things he said have actually been the right, like I said, the right things. You know, he talked about not wanting to intervene in the rebuild, not wanting to make forced decisions. You know, the piece with McMahon, he talked about how he, you know, he stands by Silas and Stone. And although that seems like common sense, I mean, his takes in the past would kind of make me think that, you know, well, at least make me worry that he wouldn't have that stance. So I think I've been most surprised by Tillman, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point, because, I mean, we've all gave Tillman some grief over the past, you know, couple of years, really, especially this year. Yeah, surprisingly, he hasn't really been – you know, out front, you know, making outlandish statements or saying anything crazy, which I think is the right move. I mean, at this point, you hired Stone, you hired Silas, you need to let them, you know, control the basketball side of it and let them run in and you know, see if they can, you know, not really do the rebuild, but do the reboot like they've been talking about. So I think that's definitely a positive sign, you know, going into the offseason. And just my most surprising thing is kind of piggybacking off what Tony said, it's just the whole season. I never in my wildest dreams, even after Westbrook said he wanted to step away, even after Harden said he didn't want to be on the team anymore, there's no way I thought that they would go through, I think actually at this point, a record for a number of players on the team throughout the year. And over 30 plus, I lost count how many different starting lineups they've had at this point. There's no way I thought, even when they traded James Harden, I didn't think that with, you know, John Wall and Christian Wood, that they would be the worst team in the league. But it's actually kind of funny the way I'm looking at it now. Them being the worst team is actually better than them being, you know, the ninth or 10th best team, just because they've been able to have open tryouts basically throughout the last couple of months and find a lot of players that there's no way in the world they would have been able to find if they were trying to fight for a playoff spot, like a Thomas, like a Armani Brooks, even seeing KJ Martin and Kevin Porter Jr. and Jayshon Tate's development, you really wouldn't have been able to see this because the Rockets would have been so so focused on making the playoffs that you wouldn't have been able to develop these guys. So in the long run, I think it's just better off that they just kind of just bottomed out. And of course, this would make it a lot better if they actually win the lottery. But, you know, that's a another story for another podcast. So that's going to wrap it up for the first segment. In the second segment, we're going to jump into some more of the questions, like favorite player from the season to standout moments. We're going to discuss what will possibly happen with John Wall and Eric Gordon. So please stick around.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
Hello and welcome back to Launchpad Podcast for this second segment. And again, we are doing a special Rockets podcast. We're doing a Apollo roundtable. We have two Apollo contributors, Britt and Anthony, on with us. Also a special guest, Tony Cole, who, like I said, a lot of y'all know from Rockets Twitter. Definitely one of the best follows on Rockets Twitter. We're going to jump right back into this roundtable questions. And I wanted to start with you, Anthony. What was your favorite player from this past season? Or who was your favorite player from this last season?
So my favorite player, there's a lot of different ones I could go, whether it's Wood or Tate, but I'm actually going to go with KJ Martin. And the reason why is because, I mean, when he was drafted, we didn't really know what to expect or to expect anything, right? It seemed like a guy that would be a G League player or a player that wouldn't get any minutes, or maybe, you know, when the last 5 minutes of a game, when a game's not really relevant anymore. But I mean, KJ Martin has, I mean, he's not only developed, you know, tremendously over the course of the season, but I mean, he's dunking on people.
Yeah.
I mean, he shook Brook Lopez.
Yeah, he tried to play it off.
But I mean, aside from that, I mean, he's developing a 3-point shot. I think he was shooting like 40.7% going into Friday's game.
Yes.
Which, I mean, that was not something that anybody thought. I mean, you knew he had great athleticism, you know, because of his genes with his dad. You know, he's a high flyer. But, I mean, he has also become a great defensive player. And that's kind of what I'm expecting and hoping to see a little bit more from him over the offseason, over the next several years, is him continue to become a full-time defensive stopper and a facilitator. I mean, we know that he can block shots. Obviously, he usually has those one or two highlight blocks a game where he feels like he's, you know, blocking a 7-footer. But I guess overall, the reason why I'm my favorite player has been KJ Martin is because the expectations were so low of him, and he's now looking like a player that we must keep.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, going from second round pick. Late second round pick, pretty much an afterthought, to one of the core players on the team. That's definitely a big jump within the first year. So let me next ask you that, Britt. Who was your favorite player from this past season?
Yeah, so I'm going to cheat a little bit and say two.
Okay, no
problem. Especially considering that we've had 30 people, yes. Players on the team. That's two full, you know, actual NBA teams rosters. So I'm going to say one is David Nwaba. If folks forgot, like, he was having a really good season until his hand injury, and actually came back for a few games to try to play through it. And then, you know, his season essentially ended. He was just really good in the 30 place that games that he played with the Rockets. And I would say that it's probably unlikely that he will return to the Rockets, especially since Tate and KJ Martin are playing so well, and they're in a similar position as him. But I feel like he'll have a good, you know, wherever he goes next, he'll have a good experience, although I would love for him to return for Houston. And the second person is Kelly Olynyk. Like, I feel like he has been a really good addition, even though the wins haven't shown. I mean, he almost had a triple-double during Friday's game versus the Clippers. He was one rebound away from it. So it's just, I mean, I feel like it's sort of like a toss-up if Kelly will stay. He probably will get paid either way with the way that he was playing. But it was just good to see that he was so enthusiastic when it came to the team, even though he was traded from I wouldn't necessarily say Miami's like a playoff or a championship contender, at least not this season, but at least a really good team in Miami to Houston.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a whole another question of whether the Rockets are going to re-sign, you know, Olynyk. But I mean, he's probably the, I mean, if we're going back to a previous question, he's probably one of the most surprising storylines of the season, because I don't think anybody saw this coming. His play when he was traded from Miami to Houston. So, Tony, who was your favorite player from this season? It could be one or two players.
I mean, I could use the same players that the Ant and Brent use, but I think to give a different person, I'm gonna go with Kevin Porter Jr. Quiet as it's kept, I mean, this guy, what he has done to learn the point guard position for the first time in his life, and then to come in from the G League and to perform like he did. I mean, people were judging him like he's a 10-year veteran. But, I mean, this guy is to do what he's done, I mean, to average 16, 6 assists, 4 rebounds in your less than first season playing the hardest position in basketball is pretty incredible to me. At 20 years old, is just insane. And you saw the potential with that 50-point, 11-assist game. I mean, that was incredible against Jrue Holiday, of all people, is insane to me. And I want to give one shout-out to one guy, Armani Brooks, man. I mean, just to watch his growth in, like, 5 games is, like, pretty incredible. Because, I mean, at first he was pensive, a little timid, and he would only stick to the outside. And you saw this weekend, I mean, this guy's taking guys off the dribble. I mean, he's using that 3-point shot to get to the mid-range, to get inside. I mean, he plays defense. I mean, shout out to the young guys, man, because they really showed out this year.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Brooks, because he's kind of another one of those players that, I mean, this, you know, be honest, Coach Silas and also, you know, especially John Lucas have helped develop, because Armani Brooks is basically who we wanted Mason Jones to be. Mason Jones is a good shooter too, but he was, unfortunately, he would not, you know, take the shot. He was, you know, too passive. And Armani Brooks is like the complete opposite. He's a guy that would not only take the three and get his own shot and get to the basket. So, I mean, that's another, it's so many different, you know, surprising storylines. Another surprising player from this year is Armani Brooks, who's definitely going to be part of the core going into this next season. I would say my favorite player is definitely Jayshon Tate. Not only just because how he played this year, but he kind of took the same path as like Mario Elie did and PJ Tucker, where he, you know, he wasn't, you know, highly sought after the draft. And in his case, he wasn't even drafted. He had to go play overseas just like those two players. And he, you know, battled his way to the league. And now this year he's going to be, you know, all, you know, first team, all rookie. And just to look at how he started this season where, you know, nobody even knew who he was. He's definitely now he's the best post player they have. He's the best defender they have. And also he's improved his 3-point shooting. And that's something he said he's even going to work on even more in the offseason. So I always have respect for players like that, that didn't have it easy, have to take the, you know, the long way around and come into the league and, you know, they take the opportunity and they don't blow it. And I definitely have a lot of respect for players like that. And Jayshon Tate is definitely that type of player. And that's why he's a lot of, you know, Rockets fans' favorite player. So definitely Jayshon Tate is my favorite player. And I'm just real excited to see how, you know, him and the whole young core is going to do coming into this off season into next season. So let's move on to the next question. The next question will be 2 standout moments from this past season. So let me go ahead and start off with you, Tony. What was your 2 favorite moments from this past season?
I think my first moment has to be Kevin Porter Jr.'s 50-point game. I mean, watching him just terrorize Jrue Holiday was like something I've never seen. I mean, that was a 20-year-old kid that was playing like a grown man out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I'll ever forget that game. He was just going bananas on Jrue Holiday. And you never see Jrue Holiday get done like that. And he was killing that man. My second, I think it's probably just the total watching the development of all the young guys. I mean, I can't put that into one game, but to just see all these guys like Kenyon Martin Jr. to Kevin Porter Jr. to Jayshon Tate, Armani Brooks. I mean, just all of these guys just develop. Watching that was a lot of fun. I mean, even though we didn't win a lot of games, just watching those guys grow and grow was really good to see.
Yeah, and Britt, what was your two standout moments?
Yeah, for me, the first one was, I mean, it feels like so long ago, but that six-game winning streak that Rockets had. of course, now it was a mirage in the desert, so to speak, when it came to them, you know, being competitive this season. But it was just good to have them go ahead and, you know, win, especially so close after James Harden, you know, decided to make his exit from the team. And it was just nice to see that and the potential that Steven Silas had if he had a rotation and healthy players, which he did not have the rest of the season. And the second one was the win versus the Raptors to break that very long 20-game losing streak. I think that was probably the loss versus OKC the game before was just a complete downer. And you can even see it in Steven Silas's face how, you know, upset that he was that they weren't able to get that close win. So for them to come back and to beat the Raptors after, you know, such a disappointing loss was just, you know, great to see. And then to see Steven Silas like smile, like genuinely smile behind his mask. And then during the post game, it was just good to finally have that weight off of everyone's shoulders. I felt like the entire city of Houston, figuratively speaking, was having that weight for 20 games.
Yeah, and Anthony, what was your two favorite moments or standout moments?
So one of them, Britt kind of mentioned the six-game streak, mainly because those were some pretty convincing wins. I mean, beating Dallas playoff team by 25, beating Wizards by 19, Pelicans by 14, OKC by 30. I mean, those were some really convincing wins. And there were also there were two of them that were, you know, nail-biters, beating Portland, also playoff team by 3. And that was right after the James Harden trade. So that, you know, those six game winning streak kind of gave everybody hope that, hey, you know, this team can actually be okay, you know, without Harden. And I don't even think Oladipo played all six of those games. I'm pretty sure he sat out. I want to say he missed a couple of games before he joined the team. But so that six game winning streak was one of my favorite moments. But also my other one was Friday night, the exchange between Bill Worrell and Steven Silas. You know, Silas gave Worrell the game ball afterwards. And then that whole exchange where, you know, Worrell was giving Silas, you know, credit like, hey, you know, I'm really, you know, you're a fine young man. You're a really good coach. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be great. And then Silas was like, thanks, I appreciate that. But this is actually about you. It's not about me right now, you know. Yeah. So that exchange between the two of them, Worrell and Silas, was also a really positive, I would say one of the more positive moments of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, just that whole exchange at the end of the game was just, it was great. I mean, to be able to get a win to kind of go out, sending Bill Worrell out was awesome, you know, being able to give him the game ball. I would say my two favorite, one was probably KJ Martin block on Boban, is just because I think that was kind of the start of where we were starting to see KJ Martin, you know, talent and where he could go for the rest of the season. Of course, you know, as the season go on, he blocks like 8 or 9 other 7-footers. But I think that was really like one of the first time when we were like, oh my goodness, he's going to be a special player. He can develop into something great. I mean, it kind of just came out of nowhere, you know, someone his size being able to block, you know, probably one of the tallest, if not the tallest player in the league. That moment still kind of just stuck in my head as like one of the best moments of the year, and just the excitement, you know, of the call and everything. That was great. I'd probably say the other one is also against the Mavericks. It was that win on April 7 where they beat the Mavericks 102-93. And actually probably John Wall's best game of the year. And Kevin Porter Jr. didn't have a great game, but he made the winning plays at the end of the game. And then at that point, you know, you're starting to think, okay, maybe this backcourt can work. you know, of course, as they go on, they kind of have still have some problems, you know, with Porter and Wall in the backcourt. But Porter making that game saving block at the end, and then the dunk, and then the excitement between Wall and Porter Jr. I mean, that was, you know, one of the, you know, bright spots of the season. And then, of course, if you're beating the Mavericks, that's always a great thing. So you can never go wrong with beating the Mavericks. So
always.
I'll probably say exactly. I'll probably say that's my two favorite moments of the year. I mean, there was other ones, but those are the two that kind of stick out when I first think about great things that happened this year. So that's going to wrap it up for this second segment. In the third and final segment, we're going to go through some more of the roundtable questions. And also, keep in mind that there's also going to be a roundtable article with a few of our other Apollo contributors coming out today. So definitely make sure you check that out on Apollo HOU's website. But in this final segment, we're going to go through some more of the questions. So please stick around.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU. All Houston, all original.
And continue here on Launchpad Podcast in this final segment, Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. If you enjoy the show, do us a favor and drop a review or leave us some stars. All right, in this final segment of our roundtable, our Rockets Apollo roundtable, we're going to be discussing a few more of the questions that's going to be coming out later in an article, actually, by some of our other Apollo contributors on Apollo HOU's website. So let's go ahead and kick off this last segment. Let's start with you, Tony. So let me get your opinion. What do you think is going to happen with John Wall and Eric Gordon? Do you see them both getting traded, one getting traded, or both possibly being on the team next year?
You know, it's really hard to predict with John Wall's contract.
Yeah.
I mean, him being owed $91 million over his last two, it's hard to see realistically him getting bought out or traded. So I would probably lean towards John Wall still being on the team. As far as Eric Gordon, I believe that he already played his last game. I believe he's probably getting traded. I mean, I don't see why a contender wouldn't want him. So, I mean, he can shoot, he can get to the basket, he can defend. I mean, any contender will want him, and he's on a decent contract, so I can see him getting traded. But I think John Wall is staying, at least for this year.
And Britt, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with Tony that it's going to be hard to move John Wall. His contract is very much, I mean, the Rockets have moved multiple Supermax or Max contracts in the case of Chris Paul, since he wasn't Supermax eligible players. But it would be very interesting for them to do that for a third time. And buying him out or waiving him and stretching his contract would be just as difficult. So I think at least for this season, he may be stuck here, even though according to Instagram, he wants to leave himself. That's a different story. But as for Eric, I'm honestly a little bit more neutral about it. I don't know if you all read the interview that he did with Kelly Eco, but it seems like he is pretty positive about the team, although he's being pretty neutral about if he'll stay or not.
Yes.
I think the Rockets will try to, you know, work with him, either to send him somewhere or, you know, figure out if there's a good fit, even though he would be a veteran presence on the team. It really just depends whether or not he wants to, you know, be a veteran presence and, you know, sort of be the sixth man on the team, or if he wants to, you know, move on and try to win a championship or at least be on a playoff contender. But I think at this point, you know, if we were going to put betting odds, it's probably more likely that Eric is not here at the start of the season than John Wall, but I could honestly see both of them being here at least until the trade deadline next year.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense. And before we I move to you, Anthony, I just want to get one thing out right quick. I know a lot of people have talked about buying out John Wall, but it's extremely difficult. I mean, most time people get bought out in their final year of their contract. And with John Wall still being owed $91 million, it's not just that the Rockets want to, if the Rockets want to buy him out, he would have to give up a lot of money to be able to get bought out to go potentially to another team. So that's what makes this whole situation really difficult. But
and his agent is Rich Paul too.
Rich Paul, exactly. Clutch Sports. So that's, you know, I don't see him saying, oh, well, give up a bunch of money just to move on to another team. But, you know, I guess weirder things have happened. So, Anthony, what's your opinion on that, on Eric Gordon and John Wall, you know, going into next year?
So I do think that the time to trade John Wall is a year from now, because he'd be going on an expiring $47 million, which being on an expiring deal has value. Obviously, because there's no long-term commitments or attachments. But as you – well, one thing I think is interesting about the Rich Paul connection is that the as far as the buyout goes, I think Wall would have to pretty much give back that final player option at $47 million. Yes. He practically had to give that back for there to even be a buyout. The question that I would have, well, I guess what I'd be curious to see is, because of the Rich Paul connection – would he be willing to give that back to go to the Lakers and join LeBron, AD, who are both also clutch, clients of Rich Paul? But again, I don't really see him giving up $47 million. He's made a lot of money, granted, in his career, both on and off the court. But obviously, he's not going to get that on the open market. Players typically in a buyout give back what they'll get from their new team.
Yes.
But he's not getting back $47 million.
Not close.
So I really don't think that's gonna happen. But I mean, based on what he's posting on Instagram, if he really wants to get out that bad and that's what it takes, then maybe, like I said, he's made enough money that he definitely could do it. But players typically don't do things like that. Now, as far as Gordon goes, I read that article and he mentioned a lot about the team is younger. This is a young team now. I'm one of the older guys. In fact, he even mentioned I'm the only guy here from a 2017-18 team. Like, he mentioned that a whole lot in that article. I think it'd be easy to trade him because he's got 2 years left, but the final year is a non-guaranteed deal or non-guaranteed year. So that in and of itself has value. If he does get traded, it would definitely be to a team that he wants to go, because we've seen the Rockets this season have done that. They've sent – everybody they've sent has pretty much been to a place that they wanted to go to, which – I know there's mixed feedback on that, especially on Rockets Twitter, but I think there's value there, especially considering the reputation they had coming into this season. But if I had to call my shot, I think Gordon will be traded this offseason, and I think that Wall will be on the team next year.
Yeah, and kind of piggybacking off of that, I mean, the only way I can see John Wall getting moved is if it's not going to be through buyout. I don't see him giving up that much money. I mean, he's coming off a major injury. No, he's not going to get another huge contract. So there's really no reason for him to want to give back almost $50 million or $50 million plus if he does it this year, just to move on to another team. Definitely with Eric Gordon, he's on a, I wouldn't say a team-friendly contract, but he is on a manageable contract. And funny enough, before he got hurt, he was actually having a really good year, a bounce-back year after last year. So, I mean, there's plenty of playoff teams that would be willing to trade for him. It's just a matter of what are the Rockets willing to take back? Are they trying to just get cap space in a trade for Eric Gordon, which would be a little bit more difficult because not a lot of teams are going to have cap space. But I think they won't have really – I think if he wouldn't have got hurt, he actually probably would have been traded last before the trade deadline. So I think that's probably going to be one of their priorities, not because Eric Gordon is a bad player because he actually had a really good year, but I just don't think he's actually one of the players when people say don't fit the timeline. He's one of those players. He's a player that needs to be on a contending team. And the Rockets are going to be better next year, maybe contending for the playoffs, but they won't be contending for a championship. So I think that that'll be one of their priorities going into this offseason, moving Eric Gordon to, you know, make room for some of the other players that they're going to be bringing back. So let's move on to the next question. This actually has to do with the draft. I think pretty much all of us, well, I guess I'll ask that first. Is Cade Cunningham y'all number one overall pick? Let's start with you, Anthony.
In my opinion, Cade Cunningham has to be the top pick. First, I mean, you have to go best player when you're drafting first overall. I know that there's talk. I guess I know the reason why the question is because Mobley would be a really good fit alongside Wood, in my opinion. But I also think that Cunningham and KPJ would be a great tandem. You'd have two facilitators, I would say elite ball handlers, and just walking buckets. I mean, there's so much that I think Cunningham could do, especially alongside Wood. So in my opinion, if you get the first pick, you have to go Cade Cunningham if you're the Rockets.
And let me follow up with that right quick before we move to the next person. If you do take Cunningham, is Mobley automatically your number two pick? If let's say the Rockets don't get the number one overall pick and they're number two, do you automatically, is it Evan Mobley without a doubt?
For me, yeah, it would be. It would be Mobley without a doubt.
Okay. And Britt, let me ask you the same question. First off, is Cade your number one overall pick? And if so, if you're to fall to number two, who would be your number two pick?
Yeah, I would have to say the same, that Cade would be the number one pick. I feel like that's likely the consensus number one pick for most folks these days. But I think that Mobley would be a really good fit. It would allow for Wood to, potentially go into the four instead of going to the five, and also would be a good backup for in case Kelly Olynyk, decides to leave, which is more likely than not at this point. But I think either way, if the Rockets are able to get a top two, I think anyone will be pretty content of having that top two, but we'll have to see it for a month or so.
And Tony, what's your opinion on that?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, yes, Cade Cunningham will be the first overall pick.
Yeah.
But I am going to differ from my peers as far as the second choice.
Okay.
I would actually go Suggs. I think that having Suggs and KPJ in the backcourt would be great. And I would keep Kelly Olynyk to play alongside Wood.
All right. Yeah, that's definitely a different take. I like it. So that kind of leads into the final question. So we're looking at next year. Let's say they get, one of the top three or four picks and, one of those great rookies. What do you do with Wall if it's a guard? If you're drafting Kay Cunningham or Jalen Green or Jalen Suggs, what are you looking at as far as your starting lineup? How is that exactly going to work? Because you don't want, I would think you would want, especially if it's Kay Cunningham, you want Kay Cunningham to start. You don't want him come off the bench. And you don't want to push Kevin Porter back. So that's going to be a tough question. So let me start with you on that, Tony. What exactly would your starting lineup be specifically if they were able to get a Cade Cunningham?
Oh, man, that's tough.
Yes.
So if they get Cunningham, man.
Yes, that's the hard part.
part of me wants to say move KPJ to the small forward, but then again that takes away from his development in the backcourt.
Yeah.
So to not upset John Wall and the continuity of the team, I'll probably start Cade, KPJ, Tate, Olynyk, if he's still there, and Wood, and have John Wall being sixth man.
Yeah, and I think that would probably be what they may be considering. If John Wall was to take on a Derrick Rose role, that would be perfect. But I think that's the difficult part of all of this. Britt, so what's your opinion on that? If the Rockets get Cunningham, what would your starting lineup be? Would you have Wall starting or coming off the bench?
To be honest, I would probably still have Wall starting, at least initially. And I would actually have Cade coming off the bench. I think a good example of this is with Ball over in Charlotte. He did not initially start. He, sort of gained that spot during the season. And I think that for any like sort of rookie, putting them first, you know, immediately up to be starting, that can be a lot for them. I mean, I think Cade is probably going to eventually win his spot, but it's not worth trying to do that if that means that it could, you know, sort of get, you know, folks mad. So yeah. I think probably having John Wall, you know, either starting or being the sixth man, and then having, you know, Kevin Porter, you know, start and Cade being on the bench is probably worthwhile, at least to do for starting the season until Cade, you know, eventually wins his spot.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense. That's a perfect example of Ball. Ball kind of just made it so obvious that they couldn't help but to put him in the starting lineup, and he kind of, you know, he started off the bench the same way. He was a high draft pick. So, I mean, that'd definitely be an interesting way to go. So, Anthony, let me get your opinion on that. What would you do with the basically the trio of Cunningham, Porter Jr., and Wall?
So that's kind of a tricky question because there's a couple of different things. I mean, you could go with a three-guard lineup if you needed to. Problem with that is that that means that you obviously would have someone like Tate off the bench, which I don't think is the right move.
Yeah.
I actually think if I get Cade Cunningham, I'll get a little bit more serious about the buyout talks because I don't know that John Wall will be okay being a sixth man. I mean, he's talked a lot about being the best player on the team, franchise player. You know what I mean? I don't really think that you can have someone with that mentality coming off as a sixth man. I almost think that would be like – that kind of gives me shades of Carmelo, which took him forever to accept being a sixth man. I mean, the infamous interview, he's like, who, me? You know? So I think in that case, I would get a little bit more serious about buyout talks. You would have – I mean, from a cap standpoint, you'd be okay. I mean, you would still have – Tate, KPJ, obviously Cade on rookie deals. You still would have Wood for the next 2 years. You can spread the hit out over 5 years on a buyout, I believe, if you choose to. So, I mean, in that case, I think I'd do that. So then my starting five would be Cade, KPJ, Tate, Wood, and Olynyk. And I think that would be a great starting five.
So, yeah. So let me let me ask y'all this before we wrap it up. So, Anthony, you talked about the buyout portion of it. Any chance you attach draft picks? Let's say, because it's not a lot of teams are going to have a lot of cap space, but the New York Knicks are the one that's kind of been thrown around the most because they will have the cap space. You know, Tom Thibodeau loves veteran point guards. Would you attach draft picks, one or two, to move on from John Wall if you were to get a Cade Cunningham?
I have been against that the whole time because I just think that you can put those picks to better use. I mean, they've even talked about possibly packaging picks to try to get another, you know, star player or fringe level star player. I think that would be better use than throwing in a draft pick to get rid of Wall. I mean, we did that exact thing with CP3, and that's the situation. That's why we've been in the situation we've been in this season. Granted, if you're getting rid of a, you know, late Milwaukee pick, I guess that's all right. Or late Portland pick, I suppose it's okay. In my opinion, I don't think I would want to do that unless I'm able to just get rid of Milwaukee's pick. But to be honest, I don't think a team would just take one first round pick for $91 million and John Wall for the next 2 years, right? In my opinion, you probably got to get rid of two first round picks, and I don't think I would want to do that.
And what's your take on that, Britt?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of giving away picks at this point. I think that the Rockets are in a rebuilding phase. And to be honest, even if we get someone like Cade, it could be a tough haul just to get into the playoffs next season. Yeah. So unless it's one of the late first round picks, like Anthony was mentioning, or a second round pick that's packaged with John Wall in order to get him traded potentially to the Knicks, since they are sort of looking for a point guard. But either way, I'm not a fan of trying to package a lotto pick just to get a potential superstar. I think the Rockets should try to rebuild, and unless something falls in their lap, so to speak, I don't really think it's worth going that direction.
And Tony, what's your take on it?
I agree with everybody else. I'm tired of seeing the Rockets trade away draft picks for nothing. Yeah. I mean, we've seen way too many players that we could have had in the spots where we were drafting, and they've gone on to have great careers, and we're wondering, why didn't we get them? Because we're packaging picks to get nothing. So it's just, yeah, I'm tired of giving away draft picks for no reason.
No, yeah, I agree with all y'all. I mean, the Rockets during Daryl Morey's tenure, you know, which made sense most of the time. They never had a first round pick. They were win now mode all the time, but it's completely different now. And honestly, at times, John Wall actually was, you know, pretty good this year. You know, did he have his down moments? Yes, but he's also come off two, you know, major injuries. So, you know, really doesn't make a lot of sense to give away, especially two draft picks, just to move on from a player who's actually can still contribute. I think Silas would just have to figure out a way to run that three-guard rotation, like y'all been saying, and, you know, work from there and to see how it goes, and then you'll have all next offseason to try to move on from John Wall. So, yeah, it makes sense just to hold on to those picks and kind of go forward with what you have. Before we wrap up the show, let me get y'all quick predictions. Last game of the season today. So do the Rockets end it on a two-game winning streak? Anthony, what do you say?
So I haven't seen who all is injured. The injury report, that could play a big part. Yeah. I'm assuming that KPJ is out.
Yeah, Wood is still out.
Wood is out. Yeah. Is Tate playing?
So far, I've seen that he should be playing. But again, you know, that can always change.
I think Atlanta will take this. I think this game matters a little bit for them, right? They're still playing for
– Yeah, I think they're still fighting for a position, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, they may be playing most of their starters.
Yeah, in that case, I'm going to go. I think Rockets are going to lose this game.
Britt, what do you say?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going – I mean, I think it's going to be competitive. I think the last few games have been pretty competitive, even the Lakers' two-point loss. But – yeah, I think that Atlanta is going to, you know, they have a chance of getting a top four, if I recall correctly,
yes,
spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs, and to secure that. So I don't think the Rockets have too much incentive other than just being, you know, having a good end of the year to win versus Atlanta. So I wouldn't be surprised at all that the Rockets get blown out, but maybe not. Maybe we'll have a really good game again this afternoon or evening.
And Tony?
I think they'll keep it competitive, but I think they'll ultimately end up losing. I mean, Atlanta has stuff to play for. Rockets, it's time to go on vacation. So
3-2-1.
So Cancun, I think I think they'll probably take the L tonight.
Going fishing,
exactly. All right, and before we wrap it up, everyone, could y'all definitely let everyone know where they can find y'all, Anthony?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @A_Duck. And also check us out at Space City Scoop at @Space_City_Scoop.
Britt?
You can find me on Twitter at Britt Robatista, and you can find me on my other show, Step Back Sisterhood. Our Twitter handle is Step Back Sisters.
And Tony?
You find me on Twitter at @Coltrane_TNT.
And definitely thank everyone for joining. You know, Anthony, Britt, as always, is always great talking Rockets with y'all throughout this strange year. I definitely appreciate all the podcasts we've done together. And of course, we'll do more going forward, especially around draft time, which ought to be very interesting on Rockets Twitter. And Tony, great job. I appreciate you jumping on. Definitely would like to have you back on. Definitely thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. So if you haven't already done so, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And be sure to follow Apollo HOU. That's Apollo HOU is all caps for blogs, merch, video, podcasts, and more original Houston sports content not found anywhere else. And also make sure to check out the article coming out today from our fellow Apollo contributors with the Rockets Apollo Roundtable, where they're going to be answering some of the questions in on an article. So please be sure to check that out on the website. As always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back for our next episode of the Launchpad Podcast covering your Houston Rockets.